cliffcentral.com.
How are you, Mr. Malala? It's nice to see you, man. I feel like I haven't seen you in weeks. Huh? It does feel like it's been weeks. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Here he is, Justice Malala, everybody. The Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's, powered by Nando's, and just after this, Justice is going to go and eat some Nando's for breakfast. It's fiery hot some mornings it's lemon and herb, some mornings it's mild. How are we doing this week? How's the political landscape this week?
Oh, you know, it's same old, same old, same old, same old. But I'm quite encouraged by the fact that the ANC has its National Executive Committee meeting over the next few days.
Oh.
And
do you think something might come of it?
Why are you such a hopeful chap?
No.
All this traveling.
Well, no, Justice, I just know that they had one a while ago, and nothing came. And they pretended that they'd had a real talk shop, and they decided to fight the demons in the ANC and discover who they really were and talk about the reasons they might have lost the municipal elections in so many important metros. But they came out with no changes, no plan, and a whole lot of hot air.
Yeah. You know, guys, can I tell you something? Can I just segue a bit from what we're going to talk about and just say, you know, on March 21, on Human Rights Day, on Tuesday, you know, I listened to people saying the ANC has done this, it's terrible, and it's failed, and it's this, and everyone, and, you know, young people like Sia, the woke people, talking about suddenly the PAC was amazing, and Biko was amazing, and the ANC was like, no one, everyone was hating on the ANC. And I felt so sentimental about the ANC that day, like,
shame. It used to be something.
Like these guys, you know, they won the struggle. Where was the PAC then?
Well,
anyway.
But you know, Justice, I mean, one of the things I've always been quite upset about is the fact that not necessarily the PAC, because, you know, post the 90s, they didn't really, in fact, even earlier than that, they didn't really have the force they needed to make any powerful impression.
Yeah.
But people like Robert Sobukwe, who was a giant of his time, way ahead of his
time. Amazing mind.
An amazing mind. Someone who contributed far more to the struggle than some of the leaders that we now regard as being the stalwarts of the struggle. You know,
yes.
And this man suffered probably more than all of them.
Yeah. You had to be special for the apartheid regime to build you a
separate dwelling.
On Robben Island.
I mean, it was no luxury accommodation. And he wasn't allowed to talk to anyone.
Anybody.
Do you know how dangerous they must have thought you were?
Yeah.
To do that to you. But Robert Sobukwe is getting a little bit of attention. It's taken a long time, but he's starting to get a little bit of attention because he should be up there with Steve Biko.
No, he should be. And you know, you think about, you know, before he went into Robben Island, after he came out, continued to be an incredible, incredible mind. I mean, there's a book that South Africans should read. I think it's written by the former Rand Daily Mail journalist, Benjamin Pogrand. I'm trying to remember the name. I think it's called, I'll remember in a minute. But
okay.
Benjamin Pogrand's book is a biography of Sobukwe, and it was written in the 80s. And he'd spoken to him before the man died. It's an amazing book.
Hmm.
And I find it amazing. It's still being printed today because people keep on going back to that book to understand the time, but also to understand the man and his ideas. They're a very, very powerful book. I think it's called This Is How Men Should Live. And it's Benjamin Pogrand. It's an amazing, amazing book. Anyway, all I'm saying is shame the ANC, man. When I have to feel sorry for the ANC on Human Rights Day because no one else.
Man die better?
How can man die better? That's the book.
There we go.
Beautiful book. Amazing book. But it will give you the soul and essence of Sobukwe. Anyway, where did we start? Okay, the ANC is going to its National Executive Committee. And there's a lot going on. You know, we spoke about this. Some among us were not here. But, you know, Ben and I and Mabale and I were in the studio last week, you know.
Yes.
And we spoke and we had a very nice chat about Andile Lungisa, who used to be the head of the NYDA and who, you'll remember, is the guy who, wait, who did he bring again, the singer?
You said R. Kelly. I don't. Oh no, he didn't actually bring the singer, did he?
Yeah. So yeah. No, he said I'm bringing R. Kelly. Mm. And everyone was, yeah, R. Kelly's coming. Mm. Here's your 2 million rand to bring R. Kelly here, or however many millions. And then they waited and waited and waited. And R. Kelly never pitched out. Anyway, that's Andile Lungisa. So Andile Lungisa gets told by Gwede Mantashe, don't stand for the chairpersonship of the ANC in Nelson Mandela Bay. He writes him a letter outlining that this is a rule of the ANC. You just don't do it because you're on the provincial executive. Andile Lungisa says, go jump in the lake or in the Mbashi River. I don't care. I'm standing. And he stands and he wins. On the Sunday that he wins, President Jacob Zuma jumps into his jet, flies off from Pretoria, lands in Nelson Mandela Bay and says, the ancestors have said this is the right thing to do, and congratulates Andile Lungisa.
Huh.
So the president of the ANC.
That's an interesting move. Like, the president can really shake his tail when he needs to, huh?
Yeah,
hops on a jet, flies there just to congratulate the guy.
Yeah.
Wow. What a move.
But he's congratulating a guy who's broken the rules of his own organization here.
Right.
And so you've got to say, what's going on when your secretary general says, don't do it? Your top six says, don't do it. But the president of the organization goes and says, well done, my man.
Mm.
So there's a bit of a thing going on there. And it's called division. So the ANC NEC is going to discuss this matter, and we'll see who wins. If Andile Lungisa remains the chairperson of the ANC Nelson Mandela Bay, you must know, if you're reading the tea leaves, that Jacob Zuma is still powerful and is still in charge of the organization, and he can basically impose and break the rules as he wishes, because that's the faction that wants to see him in there. If Andile Lungisa is told by the NEC when it concludes on Saturday that, aye, Baba, you've got to step down, there's no way you're standing in, then you know that the Gwede Mantashe Cyril Ramaphosa faction
has prevailed.
So it will be interesting to see what happens there. The other thing that should be on the agenda, that will be on the agenda, but how it's handled will be interesting, is the fact that all of us have been talking about the SASSA social grant scandal for the past, well, we started talking about it here 8 months ago, but some started talking about it a month ago.
Right.
Whatever happens, to have the judges essentially taking over the running of a government department because the minister is useless, is extraordinary. So the ANC has to discuss this and say what happens now. And it will be interesting to see whether the ANC will say, our own minister failed, and President Zuma, it's time for you to remove her from her seat.
I asked this question earlier this morning because I'm perplexed by how, to me, it seems fairly straightforward and simple, but for some reason government seemed to find this whole thing very complicated. Surely something like social grants is something that government should be able to build the infrastructure and administer themselves.
Mm.
Not for profit,
yeah,
but just to do what they've promised the people of this country they would do.
Mm.
Keep a social safety net for the very poorest of the poor. Yeah. It's not a lot of money, but these people need this money to survive. Mm. So if you as the government are going to do it, and it's not sustainable, we know 16 to 17 million people can't keep taking grants forever. They've got to become productive members of society. They've got to be employment opportunities for them, etc. But that's what we've got, for better or for worse, right?
Yeah.
Justice?
Yeah.
So now, if we want to make this system work, it shouldn't be outsourced to a private company that then for profit makes over R1 billion, we're led to believe,
by the Constitutional Court.
By the Constitutional Court. Now, operating profit's a different thing. We wouldn't have a problem with that necessarily. But what government are really admitting is, we can't do this. We don't have the means, the capacity, or the competence to do this. So we're going to give it to a business that runs on profit, let them skim a huge amount of the cream, and the people who are owed the money might still not even get it because of our incompetence.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like a new level of incompetence.
It's not only can't you do it yourself, you endanger the contract that gives others the ability to do it.
And I can't imagine a more important duty for the minister in that department. This is probably the only thing she has to make sure she does.
And she found it that all she has to do is continue with it in a way that doesn't make us all jump up and down. But you weren't here, Gareth. One of the best things said by Chief Justice Mogoeng Mogoeng last week in the proceedings.
I just wanted to get that thing.
Was a question he asked, and he said, "How did we get here? How did we get to this level of incompetence?" And you should just—it's like a three-second clip, in which essentially all the frustration, all the questions that all of us have been asking are encapsulated in that. How do you get to a situation where you display such incompetence, where people look at you and say, "Oh my word." And that's where we got. That's where we got with the SASSA issue. And so, you know, for the ANC, I don't know if the party, its young leaders realize, but this is the sort of thing that just, it's called corrosion. And for people who've lived in seaside towns where, you know, you park your car there, after a year, suddenly it's, you know, just the weather, the water, the seawater just eats into the matter. And that's what's happening with the ANC. And this is just another bit of that. It adds, you know, down the line, something comes along, a scandal around President Zuma or someone else, and it just adds to that, and it just keeps on eating away at the organization. And I think that's something the ANC just needs to realize. It will happen. It's slow, but it happens. And one day you're looking out your window, and there's your rusty car. It's not blue or white or whatever. It's a totally different animal.
That's a scary thing to think about, that we can have a rusty car sitting outside the window. I mean, is that the one future that could be on the cards for us?
Oh, it's a future. The one thing though is that other people are buying a new car and are looking after it a little bit better.
Yeah.
So what you're seeing is that the corrosion is going on, but someone else will come. Sia will come and park their new car right by the rusty car. And people start saying, no, I'm not going in the rusty car. I'm going in Sia's car. And that's, you know, election 2019. That's election 2021. And there's election 2024, which in my view will be a real election in South Africa and will have some interesting coalitions and certainly outcomes.
You know,
we go in there.
The two stories I want to address this morning, because I think you'll be the only person who can sensibly give us some idea of what we should be doing instead of these two stories, because they both don't really have an impact on our daily lives, but we're obsessed with them. The one is this incident at Spur where two rude people started having a go at each other. Mm. It's just the display of the worst kind of manners in society. Mm. And the other one is Helen Ziller. And of course, the Helen Ziller comments are important because she's still Premier of the Western Cape.
Yeah.
And what she says...
And a powerful leader in the DA.
And what she says has an impact on the way we think of ourselves and the political parties in this country and all the rest. But essentially, neither of them really... I mean, Helen Ziller, God bless her, she doesn't have as much of an impact as she did when she was leader of the DA, for example. I'm interested in why it's so easy to distract South Africans with a fight in a Spur. It seems like it's really easy. We've got Tom Moyane and SARS at the moment. He owes lots of us lots of money in refunds.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about that story.
Yeah, no.
We've sort of got bored with Batabile now because there isn't enough drama around it. But the Spur incident will get us fired up because there's a race war.
Yeah, I mean, I thought about it, and I listened to people talking, and I read the letters, pages in newspapers, just to get an idea of what people are thinking and writing. And these are educated people that can at least knock off an email to a newspaper or to a radio station. I think there are two things. One, first of all, see, I don't know if you've got any contacts with the DA and with the Premier.
Always just on standby, Justice.
Thank
Speed
you.
Speed dial, even.
Thank you. Now, will you just make sure I see the new Nokia's come back.
Can they give that to Helen?
Please. Because Helen has been trolling her own party leaders for years now. So she'll say something incredible on Twitter. And Musi Maimane has to sit there squirming like a schoolboy because he, you know, it's, oh, but, you know, the teacher said this and, oh, what am I going to do now? And everyone is looking at him now and saying, gee, Musi Maimane, what are you going to do? She said this. It's offensive. It's offensive in the extreme. Da, da, da. And she comes back from her trip to Singapore, right? A long, beautiful piece, actually, about Singapore and how amazing and how you can turn around a nation in 35 years, ends up at the very end by blaming the people who are angry for their anger. And it's like, get off, you know, what are you doing?
So just gotta, she's got to close her account. It's just not good for anyone. It's not good for her.
It's terrible. So if you can do something about that, my brother, just get the new 20, what are they called?
3310.
Yes. Then, yeah. One of those.
Yeah, don't we like the hypocrisy here too? Like we expect Musi Maimane to be responsible for Helen. But then people say that he's her puppet. You know, make up your mind as well here.
No, I mean,
this is a free agent. This man doesn't have to be responsible for delinquent tweets.
He doesn't have to be. And the issue here, I mean, Helen Ziller is speaking to Glynis Breytenbach, who's the head of legal something in the DA. Mm. And she will map a way forward for a hearing of some sort for her. But I think Helen Ziller herself is a leader, has been a leader of the DA, has been a useful leader for the DA. She went from 12% to 22%, you know, very forceful. There is no doubt that Helen Ziller also still has significant amounts of support and power inside the DA. So for Musi Maimane and others, it's a problem that the party still belongs in large measure to her. That there are people who still back her rather than Musi Maimane. And so her blessing becomes a big chunk of what Musi Maimane is in the DA. But Musi Maimane, I said this with the Diane Colabanad issue, and I'll say it with her as well. Musi Maimane needs to, if the gains that the DA is beginning to make among particularly the black middle classes, it's not huge, but it's there. If those are to be preserved and grow, Helen Ziller either has to be a leader herself and say, you know what, thank you very much. I'm going to put this phone away. I'm going to say to Sia, hook me up with that 2310.
Yeah.
And I'm going to stop tweeting. I'm going to stay on message. Because when it comes to the DA and its policies on race, on transformation, on black economic empowerment, on employment equity, she is not just an ignoramus. She's been left behind by new ideas, new nuances on ideas, and she shouldn't even get herself into that. So what she's doing is that she's exposing a seam of thought in the DA that is very unattractive to so many people. So one of the big questions about the DA is whether it has a ceiling on support or black support in particular. And these kinds of things lead to her, you know, they just put the new leadership.
Well, she said something interesting, and I want your opinion on this, please. She said that the DA is trying to be more ANC than the ANC in order to get those votes, which is what you're talking about. Do you think there's a danger that by moving more and more to the ANC's position on things, which the DA, you can, I mean, it's much of a muchness a lot of the time between the DA and the ANC. Do you think that they're in danger of giving up liberal principles and adopting some kind of a nationalism?
the problem with, I think, her analysis is that, one, to the point you're making, is that Helen Ziller doesn't seem to realize that the DA and the ANC are very similar.
Mm.
That the ANC in practice has been a liberal party.
Mm.
That the ANC the ANC has a struggle credential and and exile and so forth and so forth. And that gives it the ability to stand next to Nelson Mandela, to stand next to Fidel Castro or to Muammar Gaddafi and say, yes, we will defeat the capitalist forces and so forth.
Mm.
But what the ANC says on a public platform and what it's done in the 23 years in power are totally different things. Thabo Mbeki was the biggest capitalist probably. And oversaw a capitalist revolution in this country. How would the DA have run the economy, have run society and so forth, it would have run it pretty much
like the ANC.
Like the ANC, maybe, or the maybe, ANC in power.
Maybe with less cadre deployment, but otherwise the same.
Yeah. Otherwise the same. So for me, I think the key to what she's saying is in that African nationalist perspective. And the ANC has always had communists, socialists, capitalists out and out, and African nationalists. Remember that Robert Sobukwe walked out of the ANC after the writing of the Freedom Charter. He was an African nationalist.
And maybe, Justice, what you're saying, I'm sorry to short-circuit this, but I've just had a thought. Why doesn't, if Helen Ziller has such strong opinions and she still feels motivated to tweet her thoughts out every other day, maybe she should start a new party. I mean, like Julius did, like Robert Sobukwe did. You know, maybe there's some merit in having even
more
multi-party democracy.
Yeah, I mean,
then for people who are more hardline, they can leave the DA.
Yes, but remember that the DA, like the ANC, I mean, the politics of the late 90s and the early 2000s are interesting in that the National Party first amalgamated with the DP, the Democratic Party.
Right. Under Tony Leon.
When they found even Tony Leon too liberal, they walked away.
And who did they join?
They joined the ANC. So,
the old regime and the new regime.
So there's a bit of there's a bit of National Party, which was, the National Party was more conservative than the DP.
Yeah.
But it found a far more comfortable home in the ANC after walking out of
Broadchurch.
The Broadchurch can accommodate you very nicely.
I just saw this comment. Again, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but there's a lot coming through here on Twitter this morning. Songezo Zubi said, according to a News 24 article, which said Ziller's dumb tweets are the biggest headache for my money. Songezo Zubi said something interesting. He said they were a clear-headed expression of her views. Helen doesn't tick the dumb box. Dumb implies mistake. She's adamant.
No, she is adamant. I don't think that Helen Ziller's tweets in her mind are problematic at all. This, in her mind, this is just what it is. And I think the article in the Daily Maverick was important for those who don't want to read about the economics of Singapore, although I found that that's fascinating and I've known about the Lee Kuan Yew theory for a long time. But the very end of that article where she says about becoming African nationalist and so forth is really where the nub of the thing is. And she feels that white South Africans are embattled, are under siege, and that they can't speak at all. She essentially has some very strong views, I think, about how the new South Africa has evolved and the ability or inability of white people to participate fully in the democracy. I disagree with her totally. I think that she's it's a fig leaf. I think it's the idea of one's ideas being challenged that she's finding difficult. There are far more young people now who say, no, you can't say that, than there have been in the past. So,
well, I don't think "you can't say that" is ever a good response, even if it's nonsense that someone's speaking.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's not "you can't say that." It's "I will take you up on that. So let's have a fight."
That's good.
And people have the fight. Not keep quiet, keep it under the radar. So I think she's finding that difficult to handle. And I think she's a bit at sea there. That said, you know, it's always interesting, and these things come back to bite all of us. To stand up and look at the guy like, and the Mcebo Dlamini thing gets trotted out now, and say, yeah, he said Hitler and so forth, and everyone was up in arms, and then you say, you know, colonialism was had its positive aspects, and you don't see the hypocrisy of that whole thing and so forth and so forth. At the end of the day, I think that this thing hurts the new leadership of the DA. It's going to hurt Musima Amane. Because
it's playing right into the hands of those people who think he's just a puppet.
Who accuse him of being a puppet. And so whether he, whatever the tribunal is in the DA, whichever way it acts, it's not going to be a comment on Helen Zille per se. It's going to be a comment on, oh, this guy says he's in charge. And then people start looking back and said, if it was Tony Leon, he'd have taken out. He's not ruthless enough.
Well, yeah. Even Tony Leon said they got to fire Helen Zille, right?
Exactly.
I mean, it's just, it's almost like she's been made she's created her own scapegoating process here almost.
Yeah. But one of the things that's interesting is also the divisions inside the DA. I mean, one of the things that hasn't been charted properly is what happens to a party that is growing and grows fast. The DP was at 1.7% in 1994. It's quite something dramatic in 23 years to go from 1.7 to 27%. And so new people, new ideas, a lot of the guy who won the leadership of the ANC, of the DA in the Western Cape, it's a former ANC guy, former COPE guy, and comes with a whole lot of other traditions which integrate into the DA and changes it. So you know, a party that's grown so fast will have its problems. Its problems of what is the line of march? What is our, who are we? What is our ideology? What is liberalism in the context of a deeply racialized past? How do we deal with BEE? Is BEE even an idea that liberals should embrace, or liberals in the DA should embrace? So there's a whole vast range of things there that are quite challenging for the DA. But I think at the end of the day, this is about Musima Amane and the future of the DA.
Oh, I just got a tweet from Mzwanele Mani. Do you want to hear what he said? I was referenced in a tweet of his. Do you want to hear it?
Okay, then.
I mean, he's got such credibility. Let's take a listen. He says, he's talking to Feriel Hafiji about something she wrote about Helen Zille. I know how I come into this, but he goes, I read your at Gareth Cliff approach to freedom of speech where you defended Zille's colonialism praise. You are so wrong. How do I fit into this? Why is he mentioning me?
You know, Gareth Cliff,
I'm so quiet on Twitter these days.
You need to know that in certain intellectual circles,
I'm the straw man.
Yes. When I must say, I loved someone calling him former Jimmy. But when Mzwanele Mani has a whiskey at the end of the day.
He also shouldn't be tweeting. He and Helen Zille should have their phones taken away. They're both too old and irrelevant.
No, but you see, Mzwanele Mani tweets and he doesn't say he's not an ANC leader. He's just a troll. That's the thing. He's not hurting. He might hurt the Gupta family, or he might hurt because, you know, they're his associates. But other than that, you know.
Let him.
He just trolls. He's like a fart. I mean, no one's hurt. So
slightly unpleasant, but won't kill
you. You know, there's a bit of, you know, smell, but that's about it. So
well, there's the quote of the day.
I'm just saying there that, you know, that Helen Ziller can't just say, oops, sorry. Yeah. That,
in other words, you're saying we set a higher standard for her than we do for Mzwane Nimai.
That's the point. But I agree with you one thing, and I think this is something that this country needs to. When you first started, you asked me about two incidents, the Spear incident and Helen Ziller. This country needs to be careful that it keeps its eye on the ball. We have a painful past. We have a whole vast range of things that we need to fix. And we can talk and talk and talk. But we, at the end of the day, when we walk out of here, when we walk in here, we're trying to fix those major, major things. Unemployment, education, jobs. A new society where people have dignity and a job. For me, that is absolutely paramount.
And the biggest actor in all of this is the government.
The state needs to be capable, needs to be able to do its work. Now, because of our history, you have the kind of stuff that happens at Spur, and it takes over for a day and then 2 days and so forth and so forth. These are problems, and they will crop up in our society. But let's not get distracted from the real issues. And what's happening? I'll tell you, you mentioned just tangentially the SA Revenue Service. If the Revenue Service doesn't pay Sia's business its VAT back, he has cash flow problems. He has to tell his workers, oops, sorry, guys, we can't be paid. And then in a month, we have to shut down the business. So there are thousands of small businesses which haven't got their refunds, and they're going under. And they will continue to go under. So the sales story is, I absolutely agree with you, it's far more important to people who are doing something about this economy than so much else.
Well, you see, it's also just that the deck is completely arranged in their favor. You have to pay on invoice.
Yeah.
And that means that if you are owed money back for your expenses, legitimate stuff that's written into the law, and they don't pay you, you don't have recourse, really. That's why, you know, they've had to appoint Bernard Ngwepe to go and take a look at all of this stuff for us.
And, you know, that it had to come out from outside, from the deputy minister saying, you know, this has gone nuts. It shows you there's something happening at SARS that we should be very worried about. For me, it's one of the institutions that need help. And another institution that needs help is the Hawks. For a second time, a court said his appointment as the head of the Hawks was invalid and shouldn't have happened at all. But the police minister is protecting him, and that's a big
problem. And Past Ambor.
Well, I mean, incredible happenings will happen there. So, I think we need to be, race is an issue. Race is a very big issue. But there is one way to deal with racists, and that's to keep working and to keep performing. And they can shout and shout. But they can't stop your humanity. But I'm a big believer in that. I do think that a lot of what happens and what we see is really distracts us from the real issues at hand. And we shouldn't, you know, you could spend the whole day talking about the racism or no racism in Helen Ziller's tweet in Spare and so forth, or two idiots having a fight, people, you know, throw F-bombs around in front of their kids and so forth and so forth. Or you could say, yeah, that's what happens, that's some of the strains in our society, but stay with the program. That's what we need more of, in my view.
Thank you, Justice.
Absolute pleasure.
All right, we'll see you next week. I'm Justice Malala, The Burning Platform, every Thursday on cliffcentral.com at 7 o'clock. cliffcentral.com.